And, you know, it's a known fact that a certain percentage of people in the study can have results from the placebo. Even leading up to the study, I kept thinking, please don't get the placebo. Please don't get the placebo. I want the real treatment. When we really stop and think about the placebo, there are a lot of factors. For example, people tend to get better results when there's a doctor-patient relationship.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Superwoman Wellness. I'm Dr. Taz. I've made it my mission throughout my career in integrative medicine to support women in restoring their health using a blend of Eastern medical wisdom with modern science. In this show, I will guide you through different practices to find your power type and fully embody the healthiest and most passionate version of you. I'm here for you, and I can't wait to get started.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Superwoman Wellness, where, you know, we are determined to bring you back to your superpowered self. Now, I feel like I'm in such a fortunate place. I get to meet so many incredible people, but sometimes people have had, many patients in particular, have had a journey that has left them at moments devastated, but at the end of it, incredibly resilient and able to charge forward and really accomplish amazing things in the world. Well, I'm super excited to introduce you to my next guest because she can shed light on how we might be able to take some of the hiccups in life and turn them around, especially when it comes to our health. So without wasting too much time, I want to introduce you all to Brandy Gilmore. Brandy is a globally recognized mind-body healing expert who has profoundly impacted lives worldwide. Due to her extraordinary ability to demonstrate radical healing and transformation using the power of the mind, she has been featured in documentaries and has spoken to audiences globally, including giving a mind-expanding TED Talk. Brandy's incredible discoveries originated from her own debilitating injury, which left her reliant on a wheelchair, walker, and a cane. Without hope for recovery, she embarked on a search for a cure that ultimately led to a profound breakthrough in understanding the power of the mind. Brandy, welcome to the show. I cannot wait to dive into your story and to hear about this transformation. It reminds me of a patient that I worked with in the very early sort of stages of me getting into integrative and holistic medicine, who was also in a wheelchair and was so desperate for an answer and for finding a way. She's a very young woman, beautiful woman, and wanted a way, you know, to know that she would walk again. And then looking back, that was almost 15 years ago. I think it was right when I started my practices. I don't think I had all the tools then, you know, and we're always learning and we're always on a journey. And I'm really thinking about her today as I bring you on the show and hoping that her journey has evolved as your journey sounds like it has. So tell us a little bit about how you fell into this space and kind of what your injury was and what even led you into really understanding and unlocking the power of the mind.
Absolutely. You know, I have to say this is literally the last thing I ever thought I would be doing. I used to do network engineering and operations, and I mean, literally the last thing I ever thought I would be doing. And basically I had an accident, and technically two accidents. I had a car accident and then a fall, and I fell just wrong, just right, however you want to say it. But I ended up with spinal end plate fractures and nerve lesions and CRPS, so complex regional pain syndrome. So my nervous system, I was in so much pain. And so I wasn't paralyzed. I was messed up though. And even getting around on a good day, I could get around with my wheelchair or even a walker or cane for very short distances. And a lot of days I spent most days in bed in extreme pain on morphine. And that was my life.
Ooh, when was this? How long ago did this
happen? My injury was 03. So it's now been 21 years ago. So it did take me. When I was finally healed, was actually 2010. So it took me a while to figure out how to heal myself. And I had gone through all of the things, you know, I was trying diet and supplements and everything. And when nothing else was working, I started working with my mind, which initially the idea of healing with the mind, if somebody told me that I could heal with my mind, I would have first taken offense to it probably. And then also thought, you know, I have real injuries with a real physical problem. It's not in my head. I would have made that mistake, is mistakenly thought that they meant it was in my head, but really mind-body healing is about the power of the mind to actually activate healing in the body.
Oh my gosh, you are speaking my language, because as doctors, I think we're so trained to work on the physical plane, right? Like it's all about like that hurts, do this, fix this. Like it's like network engineering a little bit, right? Like there's a circuit and like, you know, you've got to intervene wherever you can on the circuit. And that's what ultimately is going to make a difference. But the longer I do this, which is why I was saying like, you know, just even thinking back, the longer I do this, you really, really start to understand that it's a lot deeper than that. There are a lot more layers than just this one level circuit. So, you know, I'm thinking about your journey and I'm thinking about you diving first. I'm sure you first dove into what all the doctors told you to do and kind of maybe walk us to the steps that led to the mind. Like, you know, what were you being told? What was being recommended? What were you discovering on your own until you finally were able to get to this next step?
Absolutely. You know, when I was working on everything and the circuit, by the way, you know, the circuit of the mind, just kind of a picture of how I look at it.
Yeah.
If you think about somebody who has a stroke in the brain, it can paralyze their body. So it's also like the brain body circuit is kind of how I look at it now. Mm-hmm. But at the time, yeah, I was following what my doctors said. And at the time I was on morphine, Neurontin, you know, so many different medications. I was getting nerve ablations. I would also get infusions, injections, go in for like a lidocaine push, just a lot of things just to try to calm the nervous system and try to calm, you know, the pain levels and everything. And when nothing was working, basically I started, you know, one doctor says there's nothing else they can do. So I went to another and another, you know, a second opinion turned into a 50th opinion and just trying to figure it out. And so I started going to a top research hospital and there, you know, you'd have three or four doctors would come and see you in one room and kind of then try to figure out a plan for you. And finally what happened is a research study opened up and my doctors got me in and I thought, oh my God, like this is it. Like that's what you hope for. You just hope somebody's going to invent something new and you'll get your life back. And so finally, like the study came. And I was counting down the days, just feeling like I was going to get my life back. And I show up for the study. They wheel me in my wheelchair. I get all prepped for the procedure. And a long story short, the doctor, he comes in and he looks at me and he looks through my chart and he says, you know, Miss Gilmore, you can't be a part of the study. We don't expect you to. This is going to work. And I literally felt like I swallowed a golf ball. I just was trying to choke back the tears. Wasn't doing a great job at it.
Yeah.
The next day I was laying in my bed in extreme pain. And I just I can't live like this. I just can't, like, I'm just done. But then I had this thought or this voice that came into my mind and it was like, well, what about the placebo? And, you know, it's a known fact that a certain percentage of people in the study can have results from the placebo. Even leading up to the study, I kept thinking, please don't get the placebo. Please don't get the placebo. I want the real treatment.
Right.
So then as I started researching the mind, other things really started coming to light. For example, somebody with multiple personality disorder can have different illnesses when they're in different personalities. They can have blood pressure in one. Yeah, there was even a study of a woman who was blind in some personalities, medically blind in some personalities, but not in others.
Stop.
Right.
Oh my gosh. I haven't seen that. That is fascinating. So same body, same vessel, different personalities, different medical conditions.
Different medical. One can have like diabetic blood sugar, another one not. One can be like extremely deathly allergic to something, another personality not. Different body temperatures. So different pulses, different, I mean, every, like they're literally, it's like two different bodies. It's, or back pain and asthma in one and allergies and heart palpitations in another. I mean, it's fascinating. And so I saw that and you know, between that and we know stress affects the body and the placebo and all of these things, or even people who are an amputee can still experience pain even with no limb. It just, everything kept pointing to the mind for healing. And so it just made me want to understand, how does this work?
So you start getting curious about the mind and you're on your own journey. What happens next? How do you get more? You know, one of the things that was so frustrating for me when I was on my health journey, not, does it sound like it was, you know, as complex as what you went through, but the most frustrating thing was to try to figure out where to get information from, how to put that information together. You know, what was, where did you turn to, you know, when you're trying to understand the power of the mind?
You know, at first, it was because I did the diet and the supplements. Then I would read about a supplement. It had amazing marketing. And then I would do it. And then it wouldn't work.
Right.
And then I did that a lot. And so after a while of kind of doing the marketing thing, and then it didn't work. And then there's marketing this product and that, all of these. I mean, I literally was trying everything from magnets to detoxes to cleanses to fasts to special diets. I mean, everything that I could think of. And then when all of that didn't work, I basically started digging into medical journals. And that's when I started finding, you know, multiple personality disorder. That's where you find like the anomalies, if you will. And so I started basically unpacking it, because what I did is I failed a lot. And meaning that at first I thought, okay, well, the placebo must be all about belief. And I was researching everything from like metaphysics to neuroscience and everything in between. And so a lot of things were saying, well, just be grateful for your healing. Just believe you're already healed. Visualize yourself already healed. And so I was doing that with everything I had. Convincing myself, affirmations, all of these things. And it wasn't working. And as I was delving into more research, then I found something called the open label placebo, which is exactly like it sounds. It is open label. So both the doctor and the patient both know it's fake, and it still works. And I said, well, okay, clearly it's not all about belief for the placebo. Huh. So the fact that the open label placebo worked blew my mind. And so that, you know, then I went on this journey of, okay, well, you know, years of meditation and theta state and delta state and trying all of these, you know, positive thinking. And none of that was, I mean, I could go through times where I could get my pain down, but it wouldn't stay. It didn't stay gone. My body didn't heal. And so there was this experience I had where like there was different epiphanies along the way.
And so let me stop you for just 2 seconds, because I want to make sure, because I'm thinking about folks listening. And, you know, so often we hear of, well, that worked because of the placebo effect, right? Which is, we believed in it, we wanted it to work, therefore it worked. How is that different from what you just described as the open label? Because I honestly have not heard that term before. So what is the open label placebo effect versus the placebo effect? And what has research said about that particular, you know, type of effect?
Yeah, the open label placebo. So the very first study was done from researchers from Johns Hopkins back in 1960s somewhere. So the thing of it is, most people haven't heard of the open label placebo.
Yeah, I've never heard of it before, honestly. And I talk to a lot of people and I've never heard this before.
Mm-hmm. There's more studies on it, because some people are saying it's unethical to do placebos. So there's even a research study that's called Placebos Without Deception, and it's on the open label placebo as well. And that one, I believe, is on IBS. I may have messed up the title a little bit, that's the gist, is Placebo Without Deception. And so that's what the open label placebo is. And it was interesting. The first study that was done from researchers at Johns Hopkins was basically what they had a type of script. And they said, in short, summarized, this is a placebo. And it's basically just a fake pill. Like, it's just a pill. It's just a placebo. It's an inert substance. But some other people have had results when they've taken this. So you should try it too, is basically kind of the gist.
Interesting.
So it's fascinating. But when we really stop and think about the placebo, there are a lot of factors. For example, people tend to get better results when there's a doctor-patient relationship.
So yes. Sorry. I'm so tired of all the automated stuff that people are doing nowadays and not getting results. And I keep going blue in the face for 15 years saying you have to have a doctor-patient relationship or people are not going to get better. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but like, I feel like no one is listening to this at all, but please keep going.
But that influences the placebo. That influences the placebo. So the open label placebo is the same. They've been able to show results from that, even though both the doctor and the patient both know it's a fake pill. Now, but when it comes to the placebo, results don't typically last. So typically speaking, a person will have some results. It doesn't always, it can curb their symptoms, or there can be biochemical response changes, but typically speaking, it's not a lasting healing effect. It's a biochemical effect. And so, but either way, I had been trying all of these things, trying to force myself and convince myself that I was already healed, and it wasn't working. And then as I start to find all of this other research of the awareness, I mean, we've all heard before that stress affects the body. And then also people with multiple personality disorder, technically now it's called dissociative identity disorder. So the name changed, but, you know, just in different personalities. And so it just made me really just everything pointing to the mind. It really made me explore even more. And I think another thing that really woke me up as well was that the awareness that the body, the physical body, is constantly repairing and replacing cells. I mean, our blood cells are constantly dying and repairing. And I started thinking, well, if we have like new blood every 120 days or so, then how does somebody carry on a blood disease over and over? Or even our bones, if our bones and we have a whole new skeleton approximately every 10 years or so, then how does somebody have that old football injury 40 years ago from high school? And why isn't that healing? And so just everything made me want to look and understand the mind. And so I started simplifying everything because I had been doing the meditation and the theta and all of those things, and it wasn't working. And I had this moment where a friend of mine, basically her aunt was passing, and she called me up and she asked me if I wanted to say goodbye. And I said, you know, of course. And she picked me up and I went over there. And when I went to go say goodbye to her, it just as I was saying goodbye, I also just had this epiphany, this awareness, because she had been in and out of she had been in hospice, but she was in and out of consciousness, you know, in those final days. And I thought, gosh, this is probably what I look like, because most of the day I was just trying to visualize and stay in self-hypnosis and theta state and delta and this deep state of meditation to try to get my body to heal itself. And I thought, well, if this was so healing, then why hasn't she healed? She's been like this for a while now. And a lot of people or coma or different things like that, I have to do more than just get into a really relaxed state. I have to do more than just meditate. And so basically what happened is I said, okay, well, I have to figure this out. And so I started looking at emotions, and I thought, of course, well, we know emotions affect the body. You know, if somebody's embarrassed, their face turns red. You know, even little emojis know that. We have our little emoji on our cell phone with a blushing face. And I thought, well, okay, yes, we know that. Or panic attacks, racing heart, shortness of breath, or sexual thought, sexual emotion, sexual physical response. You know, clearly we can see there's a different for men or women, but there's a physical response. And I thought, yeah, but I'm going to need a lot more than emotions. But when I started really looking at it, you know, looking at strong emotions, you know, if somebody has they can have broken heart syndrome, where a person can die of a broken heart, or terrified, you know, scared to death, somebody can die. And so it really had me start taking emotions more seriously and understanding what are they doing in our subconscious mind. What is it? What is going on that we don't realize? And that was pivotal.
So accessing the subconscious mind is not an easy feat. You know, for anybody out there who's listening and it's like, well, how do I tap into my own and try to understand it? You know, what was that journey like for you? And how does somebody really go about doing that? Because I do feel like there's so much going on there, but accessing it is so incredibly challenging because I think your sort of frontal mind or your rational mind is always taking over. Like it's always louder, it feels like, than this subconscious mind. So how does one even tap into that or even get there to begin with?
I love that you said that. It's always louder. So well said. And that was something that was a powerful insight for me because I thought at that time, you know, 20 years ago now, a while ago, 15 years, depending upon what part of my injury I was going through. But basically, that was a pivot for me and a huge insight is I, at the time, didn't realize that I really had subconscious emotions. And another thing that was, it was pivotal to realize that our subtle emotions matter. And the way I started looking at it was like this, was I thought, okay, well, if I've had an emotion, a particular emotion last week, and even yesterday, and 2 weeks ago, it could only mean one thing. It's stored in my subconscious mind. Mm. And that was a pivot for me because I thought, well, emotions, if I thought, you know, I'm not an emotional person. So my emotions certainly couldn't be bothering me. But understanding that the subconscious mind and the subtle emotions can impact us, that was profound. And so I would say a few things. I mean, for me to access my subconscious mind more clearly, I would say that the more that we start programming positivity in our mind, the easier it is to hear more clearly. The more we release stress and negativity, the easier it is to see more clearly. Also, the more we start thinking about our mind in a different way. And I would say, you know, if we look at Freud's work for a moment, if we think about repetition compulsion, which is basically that patterns breed more of the same. So we have an emotional emotions that we have patterns that continue on. So maybe somebody might have a pattern of victim or a pattern of guilt or a pattern of self-criticism or whatever that is. But we have patterns. And the more we can start to see the patterns and then understand that these patterns can affect us and affect our health, that to me becomes pivotal. And that's where I went.
So what was the dominant subconscious emotion that was impacting your recovery? Were you able to tease it out and turn it around out of curiosity?
Yeah, there was a couple insights that helped with that. I would say, so number one, I started looking at it because I was also very objective. And I said, okay, we can see everywhere that stress affects the physical body. Mm-hmm. But if we're honest, we can also see that there are some people who are very stressed who aren't sick or even have PTSD who aren't sick. Mm-hmm. How is that possible? And we can see people who are less stressed, who have more illness. How does that work? And so what I began to put together is that it has to do with a combination of emotions. And that is part of the key. And so that, so even if we go back to somebody with multiple personality disorder, that was, you know, looking at that in a new way, it could be the reason why one personality can have one illness, another personality can have another illness, and another personality could be no health issues at all. And so that was really helpful in understanding multiple emotions. And so that was one thing. And then, you know, going back to your question, so it wasn't just one, it was multiple, and it was also patterns, so a patterned way of thinking. But my trauma, so to speak, had to do around the events of 9/11 and basically a feeling of expecting to die and then also wanting to die to save others. So it was in my subconscious mind, and I didn't realize.
Wow. And so if you're able to identify one of these patterns, like what is the work to do to turn it? you know? And then is it also, the second question is it too simplistic to say, you know, people with positive emotions or people that are happy or optimistic, you know, recover faster or, you know, do better, whereas those who lean towards the negative maybe struggle more? I don't know if it's that simple to say these things, but just curious in your work what you've seen.
Well, actually, and there's two really great points you bring up. So technically speaking, studies have shown over and over again that optimism can speed up healing, can speed up cellular proliferation. So even if we look at post-operative studies, so anybody after surgery, they've taken studies of people after surgery who are optimistic. Recovery times are much better than somebody who is fearful, who's stressed, who's feeling negative. Then they have a lot higher chance of rehospitalization, a lot slower cellular proliferation, recovery time, healing, all of that. And not just after surgery, even there's been studies that have shown like a burn in the skin where they'll researchers will put like a chemical burn on somebody's skin and then monitor how fast it heals. And depending upon their anger or upset or arguments and monitor all of this. And people who are more stressed will heal slower and more optimistic will heal faster. Now we could even look at a bigger picture and show that research studies at Harvard, Laura Kubzanski did like a 20-year study at Harvard, which showed that emotional vitality and optimism could reduce coronary heart disease by about 50%. Coronary heart disease is the number one cause of death. So when, and then, I mean, we could go on study after study. There's actually research that also shows that people are the most optimistic can live about 15% longer. I mean, there's one study after another on optimism. Now, is that to say that people who are optimistic are never going to get sick? You know, the way I see it and in my experience, it's that combination. So and by the way, optimism is a key part of that combination. And, you know, since my recovery, I have worked with people who have been bedridden, who've been in wheelchairs, worked with people who, you know, showed them and they've healed themselves from tumors or even showing healing under medical equipment, where I've shown people how to use their own mind under medical equipment to release pain. And you can see it in real time. You know, they go from having chronic pain and you can see them use their mind to change it. And it changes on the scan. So point being is in my experience, I would say optimism is a definite must. And also there are typically other key pieces as well.
Oh my gosh, this is so fascinating. So with the medical imaging, are you using thermograms? Is that what you're using or what are you using?
Okay.
Yeah. Are you doing like pre and post imaging after they do X amount of work or how does that, because we do thermograms in practice. I'm just curious.
I love that. Which will be fun. You're opening up a place out here and who knows? Yeah. Maybe I'll even come. Yeah.
There we go.
But basically what I did is after I got better, I thought people are going to think this is impossible to really heal with your mind. I have to show people so everybody understands that we have this incredible ability. And the reason I lean towards thermography is because you can actually see pain from it. You can see it on the scan. And a simple way to think about thermography for everybody who may not be as familiar is if we think about if you've had an infection before or maybe a sprained ankle and it's emitting heat from that area, medical thermal imaging or thermography is able to detect that heat from the body at a very advanced level. And so basically what I've done is I have had people who were scanned under thermography. And then what I did is I had, I worked with Dr. Hillary Smith who did thermography, who basically set up the intervals. So the thermography was automatically taking a new image every 1 second. So automatically, right?
Wow.
So it automatically take a new image. And then I would work with people and show them how to use their mind. And if you, for everybody, I know you know, but just for everybody who may not know, like let's say somebody had neck pain and that means the area of their neck would be all red on the scan.
Right.
And then I would coach somebody how to use their mind And in real time, as the images are being taken, you'll see the scan go from red to green as their pain goes away. And what's also fun is you can see it's not just belief or mind over matter or placebo analgesia, because what can happen is that I've done this before where then I'll take somebody back into the negative, like just mention it and without them knowing it's anything about anything, and the pain will come back and you'll see it even on the scan. The red will come back and their pain, they go, ah, my pain's back up. And it's incredible. Now, I do want to be honest, because I show this and I've published in a medical journal as well, some case studies in a medical journal doing this. And I always tell people, you have to follow through. So in other words, some people I will take and I will help them get out of pain and they will say, okay, I've got this. And they'll literally, they'll stay in it. Like I worked with a woman on under video who's on my website who 8 years ago, and her pain never came back and she had had neck pain. And in a different situation, I can tell you I've worked with people that maybe they release their pain and then maybe they get upset about something later with their husband or wife or spouse or kids, whomever. And then the pain comes back because maybe that was their specific emotional trigger. And then they have to work on it to actually create that real change. So I just always want to be honest in saying I make it look ridiculously easy. And but it does take real change.
And that change is what? Is it, because you already said like you had been through the journey of meditation and affirmations and all those things and they hadn't really, you know, gotten you to where you needed to be. What is this journey that people need to do once they identify the emotion and the pattern and the loop that maybe that they're in? You know, what is it that they're doing to affect change?
The big picture, if we look at some of the highlights, I would say this. I would say, you know, so I have a 4-step process that I call GIFT. And step G is about getting new mind programming. And that is part of making sure, okay, optimism is there, it's ingrained. So that is key, because if we think about it, if we know that a negative emotion or pattern is affecting us, the last thing we want to do is delve right into it. Instead, we want to make sure that we start shifting it. So that's one thing. Also, in getting new mind programming, it's important to start amplifying emotions and making them really strong. And this is the reason why, is that we don't realize it, but our emotions shape our consciousness and our perception. And a simple way to think about this is we've all heard before, you know, somebody's really, really, really intensely in love. What do they see in somebody? They see all of the good. Or if they're really upset or hurt or angry or had an argument, what happens? The brain automatically will fault find. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Fault find and see the negative automatically. We don't say, hey, brain, see the negative. Hey, brain, see the positive. Our brains do that automatically. So if somebody's got a lot of fear, they automatically will see more fear in life. Somebody has a lot of feelings about injustices, they'll see injustices everywhere where somebody else might be seeing laughter and love everywhere. And so part of getting new mind programming is also amplifying it in a way that helps shift the consciousness, because to be able to get real results, we have to shift this underlying tone, if you will, of the mind, even if we don't realize it's there. Like I didn't realize that my mind was in a state of fear until I shifted it out of fear. And I was like, oh, well, that makes it better. So it's interesting. I didn't even realize that I had fear. I thought this is just how life is.
Right.
And so I would say that. So G, get new mind programming. I, identify the specific negative problem. So what is triggering me? What is that specific negative emotion? And technically there's 5 different factors that are common. And so optimism being one of them. Another one can be self-image. For example, if somebody's been ill for a long period of time, then illness might become part of their self-image that's built into their brain. And now healing then has to do with, you know, changing that. So I is the process of starting to identify negative emotions. F has to do with freeing yourself from them. So freeing yourself is a lot different than many people might think. And just because the brain can be miswired, and a simple way to think about it is like this, is that, I guess kind of an extreme example would be if we think about a cutter. You know, somebody who's a cutter can cut themselves and experience feelings of relief or euphoria from cutting themselves. And so you can see that's miswired. And maybe a more common example is that a person may feel a sense of pride in hardship. And so if they feel pride in hardship or even sympathy connected to hardship, what happens is then we have things like, oh, you know, we want to get rid of the hardship. But somebody, if they have sympathy, that might be linked to love. And if it's love, they don't want to get rid of the love. Or if there's pride connected to hardship, then a person may want to get rid of the hardship, but they don't want to get rid of the pride. And so it becomes harder to get rid of. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Goodness, we are complicated, multi-layered beings. This is what it sounds like.
And the last part, just kind of the last part, is just stepping into the transformation. So it's basically, you know, get new mind programming, identify the problem, free yourself, and step into the transformation. But yeah, it is. It's, I mean, that's the remember when I said I do this under medical equipment and I make it look really easy. I mean, it does take an understanding of the mind. And so go ahead.
But I just love it. And then you've written about this, right? This is there a book coming out, or is this your latest book? Tell me a little bit about
this book. My book was just released, and
Was it released today?
It was released today.
I'm so honored, and I need my own copy is what I need. So I'm going to have to go order it for you. So the book is Master Your Mind and Energy to Heal Your Body. You can be your own cure. Oh my goodness. So this is powerful stuff. I am so honored to have you on today on the day of your book release. I think this is something that, I mean, it has so many implications, right? It has implications for your individual health and for your family. And then I'm even just thinking about socially and geopolitically, like think about how communities work and how they perceive one another, right? And how so many misunderstandings happen. So I don't know. I think this is incredible stuff. I do think the future of medicine is headed towards where we understand the concept of integration, where these different layers that we each have definitely influence all the different things that we think of as health. And the more we can wrap our heads and our hands around it and be able to understand it, I think that's where we're really going to see medicine shift towards healing rather than just sort of like, let's fix this and let's band-aid that, you know, no matter what you're talking about, whether it's supplements or food or meditation or hormones or whatever it is. So I really do think it's the future, and you're on the edge of that. So congratulations.
Thank you. Actually, a medical scientist, he read my book the other day and said exactly, he's like, you're on the edge of everything that's, the integration part where we say, okay, because let's be honest, we've heard before if somebody is skipping meals, like if somebody waits too long to eat, they can get hangry. Then it makes it really hard to shift your emotions if you're malnutritioned or not eating the right foods as well. So it can definitely be about integration and making sure that, that all the pieces are there. And also, you know, to your point, as far as this is where medicine is headed, one of the a few things that have just kind of recently also come to the surface is there was recent research that was published through Harvard that suggests that autoimmune conditions can be caused by stress. Yeah. So that's new research. And another thing is that the Surgeon General just last year released a statement about loneliness and how loneliness can increase type 2 diabetes and heart disease and all of these things. And so so we're seeing it more and more where people are getting it like, hey, you know, most of us have been realized to believe that our emotions and our mindset really aren't that powerful. And I mean, I would have, if somebody, again, I would have been offended. If somebody said, heal with your emotions, I would have said, okay, yes, sure. And then when you see it, you even realize that people heal faster after surgery, even with emotions. It's not that it's all in your head. It's that our heads, our minds are that amazing, you know?
They're almost like their own magnetic field. And they talk about your emotions having the strongest magnetic field, right? So they're going to drive so much of what's happening if you think about it in terms of energy versus thinking about it in terms of organs and chemistry, right? Which is a big shift.
I love that you brought that energy up. That's the shift, right?
That's like the big shift. And that's what like the older systems of medicine were able to latch onto, what we got away from, and hopefully what we're heading back to. At least that's my hope.
That's exciting. And that's why my book is Master Your Mind and Energy. So this is what's exciting, is because technically speaking, so a lot of people think energy of the body is just woo-woo.
Right.
Yet it was discovered medically by a medical scientist in 1923, Alexander Gerswich, who was then nominated for the Nobel Prize 11 times and even won the Nobel similar prize in Russia. And there is even like there is so a lot of people think, oh, it doesn't really exist and it's just woo woo. However, there is also a database that's under the NASA agreement that is maintained by Harvard and the Smithsonian that even has research, new research on the energy of the body as recent as a couple weeks ago, last month. So there's new research. Top hospitals are searching for, are researching it. Now, basically what it's called is it's called biophotons. And when it was first discovered, Alexander Gerswich, the gentleman who discovered it, called it mitogenetic radiation. Mm-hmm. And now it's called biophotons. And kind of a simple way to picture it is like this, is if we think about a light bulb emits particles of light, and those are little photons, or even the sun emits photons, little particles of light. And if we think about our bodies or a plant or a biological organism emits little particles of light that are invisible, and they're called biophotons. And so what's amazing is that research has shown that cancerous cells emit different biophotons than non-cancerous, mm-hmm. or people with type 2 diabetes have different patterns than not. And so there's it's incredible, this the energy of the body. So I just, to your point, I agree.
Oh my gosh. I agree. So fascinating. So fascinating. I could talk about this probably for 3 days straight.
Likewise.
Well, congratulations on the release of your book. I think it's very important material. I do think it's the future of medicine. We are, to an extent, practicing it in our clinics. I love more that more and more people are talking about it. I'm now going to go look up the NASA agreement because I didn't know about that as well. but thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us today. Where can folks find you, find the book? What's the best way for them to connect?
Absolutely. My website is brandygilmore.com, and Gilmore has two L's. And I mentioned the thermography. There's a video on that under Sea Life Healing. So you could actually watch the woman with neck pain and see that on there. And the biggest thing is this, as you mentioned, Dr. Taz, just, you know, we're headed towards, you know, integrative and creating that change. And this is the way I see it, is kind of like the, if we've heard about the 4-minute mile, where it used to be thought that it was impossible for a human being to run a mile in under 4 minutes. And then Roger Bannister did it like in the 1950s. And after he did it and people realized that we could do that, more and more people have done it since then. And it's become a new standard. And similarly, I'll see people all the time who start realizing that we have this ability, that we just don't realize that these emotional patterns in our subconscious mind are even affecting us. So we don't do anything about it. But when we start to just understand it and how it works, that we can heal ourselves. And it's truly incredible what we're capable of. So I would say, get the book, share it, tell your friends about it. Let's create a change in our world.
Oh, love it. Love it, love it, love it. Well, thank you so much for taking time out today to join us, and congratulations on the launch of your book. I can't wait to get my hands on it. And for all of you watching and listening today, I hope you do the same and spread the word, spread the message. This really is something that I think is life-changing, life-altering, and is the future for sure. Thank you so much again for listening and watching to this episode of Superwoman Wellness. And thank you again, Brandy, for joining us. I will see you guys all next time.